This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lin Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanasan. It's 7.07 in the morning, Monday the 16th of December. And in about 15 minutes, we're going to be speaking with Datuk Dr. Norma Mansor, Emeritus Professor at University Malaya, on the question of social protections. In the meantime, though, you can weigh in on this issue through our Twitter poll, which is running on the BFM Twitter account at BFM Radio. We're asking you which of these areas should be prioritised in the National Social Protection Policy. Is it basic amenities like healthcare and housing? Is it cost of living subsidies? Is it a retirement safety net? Or is it unemployment or retrenchment assistance? Do let us know what you think. But before that, the markets.
Last Friday, global markets closed in the green amid news that the US and China have agreed on a phase one trade deal. So the US, the Dow and S&P were up, but barely changed at 0.01%. And the Nasdaq was up 0.2%. In Asia, Nikkei and Hang Seng were up 2.6%. Shanghai was up 1.8%. The STI, Singapore's STI was up 0.6%. And the KL was up 0.2%. So some big changes in Nikkei, Hang Seng and Shanghai.
Yeah, I think markets were all very happy with the US and China signing the phase one. So basically, what have US and China agreed upon? I mean, China has committed to buy at least $40 billion of US dollars worth of agriculture products annually, tighten protection for US intellectual property, which was a bugbear for Americans, and banning the forced transfer of technology from US companies, refrain from competitive devaluation of its currencies, whilst also implementing measures to improve access to its markets for US financial services.
So in exchange, the US has agreed not to proceed with a new escalation in levies on $156 billion US dollars worth of Chinese consumer goods. And that was originally planned to take effect yesterday. So that was the December 15th deadline. And the US have said that they'll also be cutting tariffs on $120 billion worth of Chinese imports that were introduced in September. So they're cutting the tariff rate there from 15% to 7.5%. Now, Washington is still maintaining a 25% tariff, though, on about half of all Chinese imports worth around $250 billion US dollars introduced since the trade war began in March last year.
And for now, the thorniest issues in the US-China bilateral relationship remain undecided, such as the use of industrial subsidies and state-owned enterprises, as well as cyber theft. The agreement still needs to be legally vetted and translated, and is expected to be signed in early January and take effect a month later. So assuming it holds, it marks the most significant de-escalation in trade tensions between these two superpowers since the tariff fight began. So they've agreed but not yet signed. And the minute I say that out loud, I get a little bit worried.
You jinxed it.
I know, the beginning of early January is still like 2 weeks away, and a lot can happen in 2 weeks, especially when US President Donald Trump is involved.
Yeah, exactly. We have to watch the Twitter world for any updates on this.
Absolutely. So for some thoughts on how this trade deal is going to be impacting global markets, we have on the line with us this morning Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer of Jevons Global in Sydney. Thank you very much for joining us, Kingsley. So now that phase one has been agreed upon, how does that change your investment strategy going into 2020? Are you more bullish on equities?
We are, yes, as a result. I think this is good news for global markets. Of course, tariffs remain in some areas still, but we're seeing reductions, and also that proposed tariff that was due to start over the weekend has obviously been cancelled. So there is progress here on the broad front. It's things like agricultural trade, some progress on intellectual property and forced transfers, and also a further opening of Chinese financial markets. So we think the latter is pretty significant, as it indicates that neither the US or China really wants to go down the path of structural separation of their economies. So, of course, there's going to be more thunder and lightning and quite a bit of uncertainty related to the timeline for the signing because it's politics, but we do think it is progress.
Kingsley, what sectors are you looking at?
Well, you know, we don't have any detailed stock ideas at this point, but I think that the agricultural measures are worth investigating. As you know, it's been a pretty tough time in U.S. farming. And there's a fairly broad array of companies from machinery and fertilizers through agricultural produce that may actually benefit from this. I think the other area that's interesting is construction machinery and diesel engines and trucks. There's two companies, Caterpillar and Cummins in the US, that may actually stand to benefit from a thawing of relations. And we also think it might be a good time to have a look at General Electric. You might remember General Electric, GE, has had a very rough time for the last 10 years. But they seem to be turning the corner, and they produce a lot of the capital equipment that China could benefit from in alternative energy and also power generation.
And Friday also saw the UK general elections end in a landslide win for Boris Johnson, cementing the likelihood of Brexit happening in January. Meanwhile, the pound continued its rally. Does this rally look sustainable, and will you be putting any money in the FTSE, actually?
Well, you know, there's that initial euphoria that we've seen, particularly in sterling and also some aspects of the market, but there's still Brexit to get through. I think it is a good time for markets now that the uncertainty's been removed. And, you know, in the short term, the smart thing to do might simply be to buy the FTSE via an ETF and therefore benefit from the market rally. But further down the track, I definitely think it's worth going through UK stocks in detail, looking for where there's opportunities. Because it's pretty cheap on a relative basis, both compared to global markets and also history.
And a Bloomberg survey anticipates that all emerging market assets will make a comeback this year after the Fed led other central banks in cutting benchmark rates. Do you agree with their assessment? And what near markets look particularly hot to you?
Well, we do think that emerging markets are likely to be the standout opportunity in 2020. One thing that I would point out about emerging markets is, yes, they've gone sideways for 10 years, and that's often associated with periods where you've had US dollar strength. And certainly that's been the case over the past 10 years. I don't need to tell anybody the US stock market's been the standout performer, and they've also had depreciating currencies in places like Brazil and Russia. So I would be watching those currencies first. And, you know, the real risk trades right now are Brazil and Russia, and they've been doing well this year, and we think they'll probably do better next year. We are actually long frontier markets at this time because we think there's an opportunity there also. But we're really waiting to see where the value markets turn, and that'll be places like South Korea. So I think there'll be a lot of opportunity next year. One just has to, keep your nose to the ground and hunt around to see where there's unrecognized value.
Well, thank you very much, Kingsley. And that was Kingsley Jones, founder and chief investment officer at Jevons Global in Sydney. Apologies there for the slight technical difficulties. We had a bit of a difficult line. But interesting what Kingsley was commenting about, particularly that he expects emerging markets to be the standout opportunity here in 2020. Now, he named a couple, so Brazil and Russia are on his watch list.
Yeah, I think he says mainly look at the currencies because in the last 4 years, it's been in US dollar that has been the strong currency, and as a result also we saw the Brazilian real and the Russian ruble actually come under pressure. So sometimes it's an issue more in terms of currency weakness versus market weakness. So if you think that currencies are going to come down, you'll just not buy those markets at all, because whatever gains you made from equities or fixed income, that will be eroded by your depreciating currency.
Yeah, I think you also mentioned now that there's a bit more certainty with Brexit, just buy the FTSE and look at the UK stocks a little later on.
Absolutely. So now, taking a look at some other international headlines also this morning, while there have been some progress, in trade talks, there's been little to cheer about in a climate talk. So the UN climate talks in Madrid, known as the COP25, that ended in a stalemate yesterday. The talks ran for 14 days and set a record for the longest ever climate negotiations, but ultimately failed to produce any kind of agreement on a new global carbon trading market.
Yeah, the COP25 talks were viewed as a test of government's collective will to cut greenhouse gases emissions more rapidly in order to prevent rising global temperatures from hitting irreversible tipping points. Many developing countries and campaigners had wanted to see much more explicit language in the summit, calling for countries to submit bolder pledges on emissions. But in its concluding text, the conference endorsed only a declaration on the urgent need to close the gap between the existing emission pledges and the temperature goals for the landmark 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. So basically, No real policy there, just the acknowledgement that, yes, we really, really need to close this gap.
But then nothing finite or nothing real objective about it. So at the end of the day, sadly, it sounds like a lot of talk and everybody just getting to have a meeting but no outcome.
Yeah, we all agree on this, but we all disagree on how to approach it.
Pretty much. Now, interestingly, the UK is also going to be taking over next year's climate talks, and that will be a diplomatic test for Boris Johnson's government since they won the UK elections last week with a huge majority. So the Conservative Party won 365 seats, giving it a majority of 80 seats, whereas the Labour Party actually lost 59 seats, so they secured only 203.
Now, this is the Tories' biggest election win in 30 years. Labour, meanwhile, suffered its worst election result since 1935. And, of course, this means that Boris Johnson has the support he needs to muscle through a Brexit withdrawal bill. So will we finally see an end to this back and forth of the Brexit process for the last 3 years?
Will Boris get Brexit done? I guess we have to wait and see.
We will. So, but right now we are heading into a few messages. And then up next, we'll be talking about the social protection framework in the country, as well as plans to revamp the system. We'll have that at Dr. Norma Mansour with us. She's Emeritus Professor, Social Wellbeing Research Centre of University Malaya, to weigh in on the issue. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.